Guest growl, Ramona. Let's go. Wow, do we have a lot of stuff to get to.
All right.
Yeah,
Where do we start, John?
Well, I don't know if you and I can undersell or, I mean, this college football news is gigantic. If you've been out driving around, working, doing whatever you're doing, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 canceled for the fall. No football for Ohio State, for Michigan, for Penn State, for USC, for UCLA, for Stanford, for Cal, for Oregon, for Washington. All of it gone. And Ramona, not just for football, but for the 2020 calendar year, which means Arizona basketball, UCLA basketball, no hoop in November, no hoop in December. And reaction is coming fast and furious. Other conferences are not necessarily following suit. The ACC just came out and said, we're not prepared to cancel our season. We think we might be able to pull it off. The SEC, which includes Alabama and LSU and the best football teams in the country, they have yet to cancel. They say they're still talking to doctors, and they think they might be able to pull it off. So many branches on this tree. So, Ramona, let me start with this. Did the Pac-12 and the Big Ten make the right decision?
Yes.
Why?
I'm just going to say yes. I think it's the right decision because, you know, when you're dealing with a public health crisis and you don't have the leadership, the infrastructure, the unity to pull all of this together, if something is giving you pause, then you turn around. And I'm going to use a baseball analogy that my coach always used to tell me when we were talking about base running, right? Like if you're rounding second and you look out there at the outfielder and think, I can go to make it to third, right? If you hesitate for 1 second, you should go back to second base. If there's any doubt in your mind, if there's like I really don't know if this is going to work. I feel nervous about this. I'm not quite on board with this. Just go back, because that second of hesitation is your instinct, but it also is the moment when you probably are going to get yourself thrown out. Like just taking that second is going to make it not work. And I think for those two conferences, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, they were hearing medical experts talk about what coronavirus can do to their heart, to your heart, the conditions that it can cause, and they just could not sleep at night and live with that. And did not feel like they had the protocols in place at all of their schools to keep the athletes safe.
If the SEC and the ACC play football this fall and they pull it off,
yeah,
doesn't that make the Big Ten and the Pac-12 incredibly negligent for cutting off the careers and cutting off the finances for athletic programs, maybe forever? Ramona, you play college softball.
It's really
the
big
small
deal.
For people who don't know, football and basketball pay for all of the other sports. I could lay it out for you on a spreadsheet, but that's the basic sentence.
Yeah.
Football and basketball pay for all the other sports. What you're going to see now is what you saw out of Stanford, where Ramona went to school about a month ago. Mm-hmm. Stanford saw this coming and they said, we're getting rid of 11 sports, including stuff like men's volleyball.
That was a big one.
Yeah, which is, you know, think about if you're a kid that's on scholarship to Stanford for men's volleyball, or if you're an incoming freshman and you have a scholarship to play volleyball at Stanford and they tell you, oh, it's a club sport now, your scholarship's no longer there. I mean, that's crippling.
Yeah.
And so if the ACC and the SEC play, are we going to see a whole bunch of people in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 get fired?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of furloughs, either furloughs or firings. And here's how this works, okay? So the scholarship money is not actually where I think a lot of the cost is, because most of that comes from endowments. It's the coaches' salaries that cost a lot of money, and it's also the just travel expenses. Taking guys to different teams, all the infrastructure that supports these programs. So I think what you're going to see is probably the only sports that have a chance of being played this year are football and men's basketball. I don't see how any of the other non-revenue sports will play. Like, you know, we, I just don't see how you can justify the expense, because the scholarships are going to come out of the endowment. You know how endowments work, is when they ask you to send in, you know, $100 a year or whatever you send, you know, and I try to send a little bit more. So they invite me to the fancy dinners. You know, if I send a 500, I get on a different list than if I said 100, right? That's important. And I like going to the fancy dinners because then I get to talk to the athletic director, you know, like things like that. Right. But that stuff, that money, that's what endows the scholarships. But the overall athletic department operating budget, like, let's say you're a chemistry professor or a science or a geology professor, you're already looking at the coaches' salaries and the infrastructure that athletics has compared to the research grants that you get or the research assistants that you get. You're already looking at them side-eyed. You're already saying, why do we need all this money for athletes? We should be funding cancer research. We should be funding research on COVID treatments, but
once you open that door, there's no going back.
I know.
I mean, and think about this. Okay, so talking about a lot of branches on the tree.
Yeah.
You're Keaton Slovis, the quarterback at USC, or you're Dorian Thompson Robinson, the quarterback at UCLA. What's to stop you from saying, okay, they're playing in the ACC. They're playing in the SEC. If you're Keaton Slovis, I'm going to go to Mississippi State and play for Lane Kiffin. Hmm. I'm not throwing away my goal of becoming a professional football player and sitting here while the Pac-12. That's why this, you know, college football desperately needs a commissioner, a czar, one person at the top, because this is anarchy. With the Big Ten and the Pac-12 saying we're out, what do you do if Keaton Slovis comes to you? If you're Clay Helton and Keaton Slovis comes to you and says, Coach, I had a really good season last year. They're offering me the starting job at Mississippi State. I got to go. I got to go play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the transfer portal is going to be different this year. You've got to let those guys transfer if they want to.
Of course you do.
And what's going to happen is, if it's postponed till the, you know, they're saying right now, we're going to postpone it till the spring. What's your level of confidence that they're actually going to play in the spring?
Well, and how about this? So let's say you're an NFL prospect. You're on Mel Kiper's big board. Why would you play in the spring?
No, you wouldn't. You're basically going to water down the season to freshmen, sophomores, and juniors who aren't good enough to be considered draft prospects. You're not going to have seniors out there, because if you're an NFL draft prospect, you can't play in the season so close to when the NFL draft is, risk injury, not have that training time. Like, I mean, you may see a few, but for the vast majority of players, it's just going to be different. And I think this is where we all have to get over ourselves and say, you know, who was the first one who had this quote? I think it was the relief pitcher for the Nationals who said this, like, sports are the reward of a functioning society.
Right.
You know, and I've been hearing all summer, if you want college football in the fall, put your mask on now. I mean, we just haven't done that in this country. We just have not controlled this virus enough to where sports get to be our reward. And I think I'm really, to be honest, you know what, I feel really sad today, because I think a lot of sports are never coming back.
I agree with you. And I also think a lot of top athletes in the Pac-12 are out of here. I think they're going to leave, and particularly if the ACC and the SEC play.
Maybe. If those teams, they could power through, but I'm not confident that they're going to be able to get through the season either. I mean, I think they have a chance if they create bubble-like environments, if they have... So the only reason I have a little faith in that is it sounds like they have the resources to do the type of testing that you would need to do and to keep everybody healthy, or to at least. But I mean, look what we've seen in baseball. You know, every time people have traveled or just gone out to a party. I mean, the Indians had a pitcher the other day who just went out to dinner with friends in Chicago, and they said, sorry, you're quarantined for 4 days. You have to drive home to Cleveland from Chicago because you broke our protocols. Like, you don't think that's happening all the time on college campuses where these football teams are going to be?
Sure, you know, of course.
You know, and it depends on, you know, do they have people, do they have other students on campus? Are they living in a secluded bubble like the NBA or the NHL are? I'm not confident they're going to be able to get through this this season. I think they're going to try, and I think they have a lot of testing, but you're going to see the same kinds of cancellations and issues that we've seen in baseball for whatever schools try to play college football this year.
This is stunning news to me. You know, Ramona, they've been playing Big Ten and Pac-12 football for over 100 years, and this is the first time they're not going to have a season.
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to – the ramifications are going to stretch far and wide. And now the SEC and the ACC, if they play, it is going to be crazy what happens to these conferences that decided not to. And I'm not so sure that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten aren't doing the right thing. I think there are so many unanswerable questions that maybe everybody should shut it down. The problem is – if you're competing for national championships with teams in the ACC and the SEC, and they're not playing by the same rules you are, it distorts the whole paradigm. You can't, that's why you need a college football czar. You need one person in charge at the top. And because you don't have that, now you're going to have some parts of the country playing college football and other parts of the country not. And the amount of money that Ohio State, Michigan, and USC make in football would blow you away. And now all that money goes away, and what happens to water polo and women's rowing and, you know, all the other sports? I think you're right. I think they all go away.
Yeah, here's at least for this year. And, you know, I remember I called a bunch of my one of my old teammates. She's the head coach at Stanford now. And when they canceled the season in the spring, I mean, it was very abrupt. Like, they were just getting ready for postseason tournament. You know, they were right in the middle of their season. They're getting ready to go to NCAAs and host the regionals and stuff. And I called her and I was just like, gosh, how are the girls taking this? How's the team taking it? And she goes, she had a really good attitude about it. She goes, you know, if this is the worst thing that happens to them in their life, you know, they consider themselves lucky. Right. And it's a good attitude. And I think that people will find that attitude on some level. But what gets hard, John, is having to have that attitude for a year and a half. Like, you know, remember when we had Salute to Seniors, you know, we would have seniors from UC Irvine and, you know, Cal State Northridge or all the whatever, you know, local colleges that their season ended or they didn't get to play in the tournaments and stuff. No, that was nice, but we all kind of assumed that was a one-time thing. Right. Didn't you assume that was this year? And then, you know, kind of in the fall, there'd be some issues, but maybe, you know, we'd mostly get back to normal by winter and spring. I don't know. You know, I feel really sorry for those athletes, because I think, you know, it's going to change their whole careers. I don't think they're going to have normal college careers for this whole next season, at least.
All right. Based on all of our social media feeds, you guys all want to react to this. The news that there will be no football. And the shocking thing, Ramona, is they kneecapped basketball for the first 2 months. So no basketball in November and December for the Pac-12. No UCLA, no USC, no Arizona. We'll let you react to it next. Did the Pac-12 and the Big Ten make the right decision, or did they just cripple their athletics forever? Because if the ACC and the SEC play, and the Pac-12, who is constantly a follower, they very rarely lead the Pac-12. They were even a follower in this. That Bruce Feldman was on with this yesterday. He said the Pac-12 didn't want to go first. Yeah. They waited for the Big Ten, and then the Pac-12 jumped in. What happens to that conference now? 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. We'll take some of your phone calls next. We're going to talk later this hour to Tim May, who covers Ohio State. Ohio State is the biggest bully on the block here, Ramona. They make more money at Ohio State from football than any school in the Pac-12 or the Big Ten. They're more affected by this financially and really economically around the state, as Lindsay would tell you. She's from there. The idea of Ohio State not playing football is going to be just deafening in Ohio. I mean, it's I don't know. Ohio high school football in Ohio is gigantic. Mm-hmm. Do kids that were committed to Ohio State keep those commitments, or do they go say, "Now I want to go play with a conference that's actually going to play"? We'll let you guys react next. 877-710 ESPN. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. Mason in Ireland. 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Today it's Momo in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne in for Mace, who is on another pandemic vacation. He leads the league. And the big story today, college football in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 is no more. They canceled it today, shockingly, because it's hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a guy. That means 3:30, Lindsay, bottom of the hour. Have a guy who covers Ohio State, and he'll help explain just what they gave up today when the Big Ten canceled football. But in the meantime, we want you guys to have a chance to react to this. Here's Chris in L.A. on line one. Hey, Chris, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Love listening to you guys. You know, this isn't going to be a popular take, I'm sure, but I'm a big college football fan. But I understand why they canceled this. And I think, you know, it's horrible that the kids aren't going to be able to play. But think about all the high school kids who missed their graduation, who missed their prom, you know, first of the family to graduate. That wasn't been able to be seen by the families. You know, this is a pandemic. I mean, this isn't like optional, like, hey, no. This little thing kind of we're dealing with. This is a pandemic. So if these kids have to sacrifice, as we all are sacrificing, having to work from home, and the list goes on and on. It's understandable to me that a college athlete has to sacrifice as well. It's horrible, but in the big picture, I understand it. And to me, I look at it as the presidents are like the parents, and the student athletes are like the children. It would be horrible, and you would never sacrifice one of your five kids, three kids, to get sick because, well, let's just see how it works out. You wouldn't do that. I mean, it's irresponsible. So I completely understand it. I hope the SEC makes it through without any issues, but I wouldn't bet on it. I have two college kids, and, you know, you have to keep them home, in my opinion, because they will go out and do things when they're on campus. So
yeah, probably
it's a lot
fair
to deal with.
All right, thank Chris, you. Thank you for the phone call. Ramona, let me ask you a really hard question.
Mm.
Fast forward 17, 18 years. Your son Daniel
yeah.
is two now, right?
Almost in October.
Okay, so he's almost two. Wants to play football. He's on scholarship to play football at an SEC school, and he says, "Mom, I want to go play." What do you say? Do you let him?
I'm not letting him play football in the first place.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm one of those. He can play soccer and he can play baseball, though. Okay,
What if he was a basketball player? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, basketball. Yeah, probably not going to be tall enough, but okay, maybe we'll teach him to shoot. I'll let him play because my view of parenting is that you train your, you know, you raise your kids to where they're strong enough to make their own choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what the level of risk is. But I think that, you know, I like what the caller said there, where it's, look, this is a pandemic in the sense that, you know, I've been trying to read up on what happened during World War II, World War I, what happened to all these college sports. And like, there were just some years that everything got postponed, just got canceled or something. Like, you know, they just didn't have a season or they didn't. And the difference now is that we have so much money tied up in it and there's such a huge economy in and around it. But, you know, they should just, you know, do what they did in the spring, which is they give everybody else another year. Like, you don't lose your eligibility. And for the vast majority of athletes who are going to be affected by this, you know, if we're able to get things under control and they can come back in the spring, like, that'll be okay. You know, it's like your plans don't always go exactly how you expect them to. It's just going to affect this year's draft class.
Well, it's going to affect everything. I mean,
yeah.
Think you're an NFL team and you get your eyes on – You know, Justin Herbert was the Chargers' first-round pick. I think right. they took him at the fifth or sixth pick overall.
Yeah.
If he doesn't play his last year, do they still take him?
I don't know. He might have been the number one pick, actually. Right. He kind of played his way out of the number one spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
Let's go to Terry in Northridge on line three. Hey, Terry, you're on 710 ESPN.
Hi, John. Hi, Ramona. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Terry, what do you got?
Just had a question. The conference said that are going to play football. Are the players signing waivers? So if they get ill, blood clots, or have to have amputations?
Good question.
Is the school going to be responsible for that or what?
Ramona, I would think they would have to have them sign some type of a waiver just to protect themselves from lawsuits.
Yeah, I think that you already signed something that says if you get hurt, they have to cover you, right? Like it's like an insurance. Like if I got hurt playing softball, like I don't have to pay for my surgery. It's not my health insurance or my parents. It's Stanford would pay for that, right? So I think it's similar to that. Like if you got the virus and something happened to you, the school's athletic insurance is going to pay for all of that. But I don't know if you sign a liability waiver that says you won't sue them if you get the virus playing. Because if you did that, like you should be able to decide not to sign it too, to opt out of signing it, to say like, I want to play, but I'm not going to sign a liability waiver. I think they can't force you to sign that.
Let's go to Nick in Laguna. Hey, Nick, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. Ramona Shelburne working twice as hard for half the money. I love you. We got to get you some Stephen A. money and prop you up. You're working too hard, Ramona.
Hey, I'm all about it.
Dream job.
What's that? If you can get me some Stephen A. money, just send over the proposal right now.
You'll get there. It was a historic day today anyway. Hey, listen, we got some of the greatest scientific minds in the world of all time working right now at Stanford, at Cal, at UCLA, in particular those three, okay, Nobel Prize level. So it's not surprising that they canceled. If you're going to react, you got to overreact. The kids' health is number one at issue. John, they canceled water polo at UCLA like about 20 years ago.
I was there when they made it a club sport. They did it in the 80s.
Yeah, it was sad. I mean, they won national championships. They'll get through it. Sports isn't the most important. But listen, if our country took the advice of the people and the culture that gives us the SEC at pivotal moments in our history, like let's say the Civil War, Reformation, Jim Crow, the civil rights are right now, we would have a totally different country, okay? Want to go have SEC football games, fill the stadiums with 100,000 people? Go let them have that, because this is a regional pandemic, and what happened in Georgia and Mississippi and Louisiana when they just opened the bars 2 months ago and you're reaping the benefits of it or the deaths of it now, that's what's going to happen. Okay, and there are kids who are going to get it who are going to end up having their legs amputated. They're going to end up having cardiovascular problems for the rest of their lives. They may have a lower mortality rate. They're also going to spread it. And I'll tell you what, I got an 8-year-old, and her elementary school is not open. 15-year-old, and his middle school ain't opening. So we shouldn't go back to sports except in the South that those idiots want to, until the elementary schools and our babies are back in school. When our babies are back in school, then we can start thinking about having sports. But until then, too many people are dying. If you don't understand that, you're not wearing a mask, and you should be wearing a mask. Ramona, I love you. John, you got your dream job.
Nick, thank you for calling.
Thanks, man.
Boy, great energy in that call.
But,
I hope he's wrong. I hope that the people in the South, that when they try and play, I hope they don't have any of those things he described. But it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible.
I was listening to somebody, I think it was one of the points that Trevor Lawrence was making, either on Twitter or some interviews that he was doing. They all are abiding by social distancing and mask wearing and stuff like that right now because they think there's a chance they can play. But, according to Trevor, he goes, if we don't have a season, I don't think that people will. And in other words, they're safer being in this controlled environment where everybody's trying to abide by the rules and stay safe than they would be if they just went back into the general population. It's an interesting argument. It's also a fairly sad one because it should be the same in the general population. Like if we all as a country would just observe common sense, wear a mask, keep your distance, you know, don't do, you know, real risky, don't have a big house party with 50 people, you know, whatever people are doing. I mean, if we would all do that, then we could have some of these sports. We could bring down our numbers, but we're clearly not.
It is such a hard decision. Such a hard decision. All right, coming up next, we're going to go to Ohio and talk to a guy who covers Ohio State and find out what happens next for all these great players. You know, yeah. Ohio State sends more people to the NFL. USC sends more people to the NFL than almost any school in the country. What do those kids do now? We'll also get into the Lakers. Kyle Kuzma hit a game winner last night. And right now, there are a bunch of games going on that will have a say in who the Lakers play in the first round that are affecting the play-in tournament in the 8 seed. We'll get to all that coming up. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Mason in Ireland, we are covering a lot of different stories today. The big one is college football. We're going to get into the Lakers coming up here in a minute. But the big one is the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have postponed all fall sports, all of them, not going to play. And whereas it is erring, Ramona, on the side of caution, it looks incredibly weird compared to the fact that the ACC and SEC came out today and said, for the most part, they're going to try and play. So there's a huge disconnect, at least right now, in college sports. It all could change and kind of fall in line here in a month or two. But for now, you've got half the country saying we're in and half the country saying we're out.
And, you know, I don't think there's a coincidence about which half the country is in and which half the country is out. I mean, that, you know, generally speaking, the people who in our country who have, you know, kind of done with the states that have shut down, right? Like California shut down and New York, in the Midwest, well, like Chicago, a lot of those states essentially said, you know, they shut down early and implemented mask wearing, you know, as a mandate.
Yeah. And, whereas, and by the way, I find it interesting that financially this, what's surprising the most is, if you were to make a list of all the schools that canceled fall sports today, some of the biggest programs, some of the biggest revenue generators in the history of college athletics are on that list. And none is bigger than Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Ohio State football is as big of an economic driver in that, you know, keep in mind they have the Browns and the Bengals as their NFL teams in that state. Ohio State's the biggest football team in the state. And Tim May, who writes for Letterman Row, has been covering Ohio State football since I was in college, since 1984, and is nice enough to join us now. Tim, thank you for coming on. And let me start with this. Did it surprise you that Ohio State was on board with the Big Ten canceling fall sports, or were they, as far as you know?
No, I think you had a faction pushing to postpone and see how things go over the next several weeks. The leader of that faction in the Big Ten would have been Ohio State, probably Michigan right there with them, for sure Penn State. So, you know, it's that old line, you know, you go in as individuals, but you come out as a group, you know, like a jury or whatever. And obviously this jury didn't have to have a unanimous decision. So, you know, Gene Smith has said the right things as far as, you know, being a conference member is concerned, but he also, you know, has let it be known. He was, you know, he was disappointed in the sense that they had weighed all the options, et cetera, at Ohio State. Ohio State was doing probably, if not the best, as good a job as anybody else in the country in terms of dealing with their players, the testing, the distancing, keeping everybody, quote unquote, safe, at least when they were under the auspices of the football team. And, you know, it's, but majority rules, and, you know, no one knows right now. I haven't seen a number, and I'll be honest with you, the way the numbers have been bandied about the last several days, I probably wouldn't even believe a number, except that there was some kind of majority vote that the Big Ten would not play football this fall. But, yeah, I mean, Ohio State wanted to play. Ryan Day made that emphatic, you know, yesterday in an interview with ESPN2 at the end of the day, and, you know, made it emphatic with us and stuff. You know, we were just standing here. We just watched him walk out. He didn't want to talk to any reporters, but he just walked out of his office, and I just tweeted a picture of it. It's probably the longest day of his coaching career so far.
Is there a chance that Ohio State could go rogue? Could they just say, okay, we don't care about the conference games. If you guys don't want to play, that's fine, but we'll go play some of the ACC teams that want to play or the SEC teams that want to play.
Yeah, Gene Smith basically indicated today that that's not really the way they would think. You know, you know, Ryan Day said, you know, they're yesterday that they're up for anything as far as he's concerned about possibly having a season. I think the only way that could happen would be if the other three Power Fives all cancel the fall season, and then you have several teams like, you know, Nebraska. Scott Frost has obviously pointed out that they would be willing to play anywhere, anytime, so to speak. And but that would take a lot of organization in a short amount of time. And if anything has been proven over the last couple of weeks in major college football, organization is not at the top of the list.
We're talking to Tim May, who covers Ohio State for Letterman Row. Tim, what, you know, Ramona played softball at Stanford. I was at UCLA in the 80s. We both think that this is going to probably wreck all the other sports. Do you buy that? Do you think that by canceling football, it's such a revenue generator for Ohio State? Does it trickle down to probably canceling a majority of the other sports?
You know, I think the Ohio State Athletic Department, the last time I saw budget figures, was somewhere in a $210 to $220 million range per year. Football generates, you know, based on the figures I've seen, roughly half or a little bit more of that, you know, or a little bit more of that figure. Yeah, this isn't going to have a trickle-down effect on the Olympic sports, as they call them. This is going to have an elevator, you know, elevator with a broken line effect, I do believe in, especially for some colleges. Now, the thing about Ohio State is, unlike almost all of its brethren in the Power Five leagues, Ohio State, you know, has 36 varsity sports. You know, Alabama, all these other schools don't come anywhere close to that. Texas, even. But there's going to be more to fall. Gene Smith is definitely stepped forward, and the athletic director at Ohio State stepped forward and prevented that from happening thus far. But there's going to be, forget about, you know, the asterisk by the football season, there's going to be a financial void, black hole for want of another term, left from this fall that's going to take probably a decade or two to make up when you really think about it.
Yeah, so what happens? Do they cut sports, or do they furlough employees and coaches? Do they cut scholarships? I think when Stanford cut their 11 sports about a month ago, the idea was it would only, like, if you were still there, then they're still going to play this year, if depending on if they're playing at all. But they're still on scholarship. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't lose your scholarship, but in the future, they just won't fund new scholarships. How would that affect the rest of the athletic department?
You know, I don't know. I mean, because I'm not even gonna put forth an answer there, because, you know, most of the scholarships at Ohio State are funded by fundraising
endowments.
So it's like it's not necessarily relying on income from, like, for example, the football. I'm talking about the scholarships, but you know, you're talking about millions, tens, you know, tens times tens of millions of dollars of coaches' salaries, et cetera, that are, you know, obviously in jeopardy, you would think, at this point, and other things like that. But, you know, so I don't really have an answer for you yet because they haven't gone down that path yet. They haven't revealed anything like that.
Tim May, who covers Ohio State for Letterman Row, is with us. He's been covering Ohio State for 30 years. And Tim, I'll just use Justin Fields as an example. Justin Fields, the quarterback at Ohio State, is a top pro prospect. He's projected to go in the first round of the draft next year. Is there a chance that kids like that, kids that you know they're going to get an opportunity to play at the next level, if Ohio State and USC and UCLA don't play this fall, but the ACC and the SEC do play, I think they're going to have to let those kids transfer. They're going to have to change the rules in the transfer portal. Would a kid like Justin Fields leave? Has he said anything about that?
Well, number one, I don't think they're going to change those rules. I don't see how that's going to happen because, you know, that would just create chaos. And then number two, what do you do with the schools that they supposedly would transfer to? You know, I mean, you let them have 120 scholarships this year, just so these guys can transfer.
Yeah,
them.
That's a good point. Maybe they will. Whatever. But will Fields, if they, example, if they, hey, Tim, if they play in the spring, why would Fields play? He's going to the NFL in the fall.
I was going to get to that. But what I'm trying to say is what your premise was, you know, Fields wouldn't necessarily be eligible to, but Sean Wade, who came back for his fourth year at Ohio State, a highly decorated, highly thought of cornerback, you know, he's already graduated. Baron Browning, a linebacker, has already graduated. You know, whether or not they now would be eligible, I think they would be probably to transfer and possibly play immediately somewhere.
Right.
You know, that's what you got to, that's what we're all watching here over the next several weeks.
Interesting.
There would be some of those guys that, you know, might decide to do that. But, you know, you have to make room at the other place, too. You know, I mean, so that would be really, that'd be really interesting to watch that dynamic play out. But, yeah, spring football season, the idea of that, I think the team that Ohio State would end up fielding would just be a shadow of the one that, that was the number two team in the country. Watched most of the players walk out today from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center with their heads down. I mean, some big-time players, Wyatt Davis, Josh Myers, two big-time linemen there, Zach Harrison, Tuff Borland, the three-time captain, only the second three-time captain in Ohio State history. All these great players walking out, Garrett Wilson, and it's hard to believe they're going to turn around and possibly try to play a spring season if, in fact, some of those guys opt out, you know, that could be eligible for the draft in the spring. It's, you know, the other thing what's going to happen with the NCAA and the SEC, ACC, Big 12 and all that. I mean, there are all kinds of dynamics that are going to be in play here in the next several weeks.
Tim, thank you for doing this. This was very helpful. I know it's been a crazy day back there for you guys. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Oh, anytime, man. I enjoyed it.
All right, there's Tim May. And Ramona, it's just a mess. I mean, from top to bottom. All right, let's talk about something else just to get our minds off this.
I know. I'm like depressed after all this. I mean, I just, all I'm doing is thinking about all the kids who are just not going to be able to play sports this year, next year, maybe ever again. All these programs are going to, you know, lay coaches off. Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know who you blame for it. It is a pandemic. This has happened in our world before, but I think the reality that we've all been kind of dreading has finally come to bear.
All right, coming up next, the Lakers last night hit a game winner, not from LeBron, not from Anthony Davis, but from Kyle Kuzma, and it's a play that Frank Vogel drew up specifically for Kuz. We'll get into that coming up next. Mason in Ireland, Ramona in for May, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, NBA news. The Lakers are closely watching the bubble games today because, Ramona, the Spurs have already won. The Suns are up by 10 with about 4.5 minutes to go, and the Grizzlies are losing, which means you know, the Lakers are going to play the 8 seed in the first round of the playoffs. It means that all four of those teams, Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, and Phoenix, will decide who goes into the play-in tournament on the final days of the seeding games.
Yes!
On Thursday and Friday.
This is awesome!
Well, I think they're going to keep it past this year. It worked out so good.
Oh,
I think,
so cool.
I think they're going to keep it moving forward.
Well, and you know what's great is, you know, like, the only reason the Suns are in the bubble, there's two reasons. Okay?
And they're about to go to 7-0, by the way.
They're about to go 7-0! The Suns are in the bubble because the NBA needed to create the opportunity for the 8-9 game to happen in both conferences. And in the Eastern Conference, the closest team to the eighth spot was Washington, and they were 6 games back out of the eighth spot. So they said, well, if we're going to justify Washington being in the bubble, we've got to have the same threshold for the Western Conference. So the Suns, who were 5.5 back, just barely made it. They wouldn't have been in. Otherwise, they would have just done the 4 Western Conference teams that were within 3.5 games, I think. It was the Pelicans, the Kings, the Trailblazers, and the Spurs, right? They would have just done those 4. We would have had a 20-team playoff. But the Suns, who are, I mean, you know, like, you know when you get married and you have, like, a 100-person wedding and you have a list of, like, okay, once these people start giving us our nose, then we can invite some other people.
The Suns.
Yeah, that's what the Suns are. And these guys are 7-0. It's awesome.
All right, did you watch the end of the Laker game last night?
I did, but I did not get to hear your call of it. And I have been, you know, I usually listen to you on the radio when I'm driving around, but I don't go anywhere these days. So
I need to hear it.
Yeah, right, I need to hear it, John.
Funch, play the end of the game.
4 seconds remaining. Ball's into Anthony Davis. Looks like Davis hands it to Kuz. 3 for the win. He got it! Kyle Kuzma hit the 3. There are 0.4 remaining in the game. And unless the Nuggets pull off a miracle, Kyle Kuzma's just beat him. 23 in the game for Kuz. And what a night for him.
All right, I like that. Okay, I like that.
But Ramona, the weirdest thing is, and I love this, I think this was brilliant, is that they drew that play up for Kuz. Here's why I love that so much. Frank Vogel's a smart guy. I think he knew, okay, we're not, and he actually admitted this after the game, we're not going to show anybody whatever our favorite or best end of game play is. But if I somehow could drop a play for Kuz and he hits it, now they have to defend Kuz in the playoffs.
Right.
They can't leave him wide open now because he's got the confidence that he can hit that shot. Did you hear what Kuzma said after the game?
Yeah.
All right, Funch, play the quote about Jesus. Here's Kuzma after the game.
I think Jesus could be in front of me and I'll probably still shoot. So, I mean, it don't really matter to me. Just got an open look. It's a play that we kind of ran and practiced a few times. You know, prior to the restart, and you know, coach had faith in me and just called my number, and I, you know, paid off.
Kevin Durant tweeted today one line: "I got Jesus getting the stop," which is very funny.
That was a good line.
But you found some stuff out after the game about that play, right?
Well, it was interesting. I liked what Vogel had said in the post game Zoom. When he basically said, I stole that play from Mike Budenholzer, who used to run it when they were in Atlanta. He would run it for Kyle Korver, and they would have Paul Millsaps at the screen. And in this scenario, they had Anthony Davis had the pass, and it went to LeBron, but LeBron basically drew two guys away from the ball. He was like this decoy and got two guys to follow him, so Kuz had this open shot. I was like, that was a great out-of-timeout play. Like, that was a great ATO. You know, where'd you get it? Why'd you guys run it? And Vogel said, that they had run, they had practiced it, and they had done it in practice a couple times, and he hit it. And then he kind of laughed and he goes, I'm really glad he made it, because if they went to overtime, they were just going to sit everybody. Like, they weren't going to let the LeBron and AD and all those guys play that many more minutes.
Let me ask you this. As the station's resident Laker homer, I was very happy that the Lakers won that game. They had great games from Kuz, from LeBron, from AD, all north of 25 points. And here's what I'm worried about. The Lakers didn't stop Denver's backups.
I know.
Denver's backups were keeping them in that game. So if you're a Laker fan, what's your takeaway from that game? That they got it together offensively, that they hit all their threes? That's what I'm tending to look at. I kind of go to the school, I know you do too, that as long as they have LeBron and AD, they're going to be favored to win any series. Yeah. So I'm happy about that game last night, but I've heard from a lot of Laker fans saying, yeah, but those are the Nuggets backups. Should you worry if you're a Laker fan that Denver stayed in that game without their stars?
No. Look, I think the fact that LeBron came out and said after the game, if we're going to win, Kuz has to be our third best player. That's the most declarative statement I've heard him make about Kyle Kuzma since he's been here, really, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, he's, you know, all year we've done endless shows saying who's the Lakers' third best player. And this year, I would probably argue it's been KCP, right? It kind of seems like I would say Kuzma's been really up and down. He's sort of hard to count on night to night. He's been injured. But the one thing that I thought Kuz did that nobody's going to talk about is he played some pretty good defense. I mean, he had three steals again. Mike Trudell had a good little stat there he has seven steals in his last three games. And the entire season, the 54 games before that, he had 41 steals. I mean, that was like he's really stepped it up defensively. And I think Kuzma has realized that if he wants to be on the court and be the Lakers' third best player, he's got to work his butt off defensively. He's got to be the perimeter defender that they can throw out there against Kawhi or Paul George.
Yeah, to your point, when Frank Vogel and Funch, I think you have this, when Frank Vogel was asked after the game if Kyle Kuzma is going to remain a starter, he said probably not, and it was for defensive reasons. Do you have that, Funch?
I got it.
Go ahead and play it.
I think it's unlikely that we keep him in a starting lineup. It's something I want to look at. You know, something we have available with, depending on what matchup we're looking at. You know, we're likely going to need two quick guards. The way most of these teams that we could be facing, it's a small ball league. You know, so we're going to need speed, defensive speed on the perimeter. So you know, KCP and Danny is likely the starting lineup. But you know, again, you get in different matchups. You know, their three man is 6'10", and Michael Porter Jr. So I mean, if you get into a matchup against Denver or against another team that is big like this, that could be an option for us. So it's just another part of the trial and error and evaluation of looking at different things during these seeding games.
And one thing I learned from Phil Jackson, Ramona, is it doesn't really matter who's out there at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important who's out there at the end. You remember how upset Lamar Odom was when Phil told him he wanted to make him a sixth man, and then he went out and won sixth man of the year? And it's because when he would bring Lamar into the game, he'd be playing against the other team's backups, and he would just eat him alive. And then at the end of the game, Lamar was always in the finishing lineup. And I think that could be something Kuz could look at. He could, you know, bring him in with 7-8 minutes to go in the first quarter, or with 7 or 8 minutes gone in the first quarter, and then have him out there at the end. And to your point about that play at the end, if you look at Mason Plumlee, he didn't know what to do.
Yep.
He was the guy guarding Kuzma. But LeBron inbounded the ball to Anthony Davis, and then LeBron ran right to the basket.
Yep.
And Mason Plumlee saw LeBron run down there, and he said, oh, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here. They're going to try and give the ball to LeBron. And Kuzma just ran the picket fence behind Anthony Davis and had a wide-open shot. And so that was so smart for the Lakers to do that last night, because now it's on tape. The other teams have to defend it.
Yep.
And if you look at Mason Plumlee, when he is standing in the middle of the key, he looks at LeBron. He goes, I can't leave here. LeBron's here. And then he realized Kuzma's going to shoot it. And by the time Bol Bol gets out to Kuz, it's too late.
Well, you know what was – There was another quote, and I'm always one of these people. I have that ear now, John, where I listen for like hints that let you in on what somebody's really thinking, right, and how they really feel about it. There was another quote that Kyle Kuzma gave about, you know, they asked him if it was, did he play extra hard because his mom was one of the virtual fans? You see Carrie Kuzma sitting in the stands, right? you know, she was home in Michigan on the virtual, you know, on the virtual fan thing. And he goes,
what a great night for her about, to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
He said something about, well, I had to, because I was starting. And then he says, you know, everybody knows I'd be starting on any other team in this league, but on the Lakers, we got two of the best guys out there. So I come off the bench. Right.
Which was Lamar Odom.
No, Kuz.
No,
right?
But I'm saying that's why Lamar Odom never started.
And it was when Kuz said that, I mean, that's sort of the window into his soul, right? Like, he believes that he is a starter. He believes he should be a starter. He has accepted this role, but I don't think he loves this role. And good. Light a fire under him, you know? And I remember when Lamar was in that position, like, he didn't like it either. Phil kind of talked him into it. I remember Jeannie Buss would sit there whenever Lamar would get up off the, this was a Jeannie Buss, Linda Rambis thing. They sit, you know how they sit in the second row there? When Lamar would get up off the bench to come into the game for the first time, they made a big show about standing up and cheering for him when he would come into the game as a bench player, because I guess Phil had told them, like, Lamar's really upset about this and he's really down about not being a starter. So, you know, show him some love when he gets up, when he comes into the game. I mean, it's funny to think about, like, the, you know, things that we just consider small issues, like starting or how much that means to a guy. But I do think that bothers Kuz more than he lets on. It's just, you know, after games like that, he's got to say something.
He was in a good mood last night. All right, coming up next, the scoop, all the things we haven't talked about yet. We'll get into that next. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.